Hello and welcome to Dyslexia Explored. I'm Darius Nomdaron, and what we do in this podcast is interview interesting people and discover their dyslexia story, where it began, how they've identified it, gone through the challenges, and where they've got to right now, their successes, their failures, and just the whole story. And I've got a very interesting character here today, very interesting person, a negotiator. And Susan will tell you more about what she does. Susan Ibitz, it's really great to have you here on the podcast. Hi.
Likewise. Thank you very much for the invitation. It's always good to have a premises and a channel to talk to other people with dyslexia or parents. They have kids with dyslexia and says, oh, they're going to fail. Like, no, they're not. Let me tell you, a lot of successful people have dyslexia, and more awareness and more we talk about that, we're going to demystify it. We're stupid.
Yes, absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why I have these conversations with people, because often we think of dyslexia as just an issue when you're like in primary school, learning to read and things like that. But dyslexia comes with challenges and advantages. And, you know, finding how people overcome the challenges and find the advantages is a fascinating story woven through people's lives. And often people with dyslexia don't follow a set track. They have a meandering route. And I want to find that out with you. But why don't we tell people a little bit about the end of the story, where you are right now, before we go to the beginning of the story, you know, and we do a flashback. So right now, who are you? What do you do right now, Susan? What's your life about?
It's crazy. 2 weeks ago, I started my second master in behavioral economics. It's a dual master bilingual. So I do it in Spanish and English. And I was accepted without having a degree because I was evaluated for the recommendations later than I have. I have a personal recommendation from Dr. Paul Sack, the father of the behavioral economic, the one who discovered how oxytocin work and the way we buy.
You mean Dr. Sachs, who wrote the books? Oh, wow. Fantastic.
We become really good friends. And when he have time, he's extremely busy. And it's an honor. We were introduced to a friend when he says, like, what are you reading? Oh, I'm reading this last book of Paul Sack. Oh, you want to make them? Like, what? Like, and he introduced it. And I was all over the place the first time. And at the end of the meeting, I read an email that says, I'm apologize. I'm normal, but I was so excited to meet God and I was all over the place. I apologize. I swear to God, I'm normal. I got tested. I'm normal. I can give you a bill of clean of my psychologist. And he says, I enjoyed so much. I love your energy. I love your brain. Why would we do it again? And we keep talking. And when I says, hey, Paul, guess what? It's your fault. I registered for my master in behavioral economics. And he says, finally, I was waiting for you to do that. And I have a recommendation from my hostel negotiator coach. And he put a lovely letter saying that she was so amazing that even ended up taking classes with her. I have more letters than I should have. And the CEO of the university says, you're the first student that we're going to approve under these conditions, but the words, not only the people who recommend you, the words on the kindness they use about you and the effort and how much you fight for each step and how easy you adapt, we're going to give you the chance. And I'm driving crazy all the teachers. I'm so sorry for them because I bring all these books and study and the other students look at me like, what is wrong with her? I'm clinically crazy, so we are good to go.
Fantastic. So you're doing a master's and you haven't done an undergraduate. You haven't done an undergraduate degree.
No, because I was kicked out from the uni when I was 17.
Ah.
So that's where my story here and my past is so correlated. First of all, I'm so happy that I'm dyslexic. It's such a gift. My only, when people says, what are the things that will tell yourself when you was 15 years old? And like, do more research. Because you're not stupid, you're going to have a great path. But it took me longer to find a way to study and utilize that path in my convenience. And again, one of the things that Alexia taught me is I always have the no in the beginning. So
you
I always
have
yes.
a no.
like yeah. from dating, you do your dating app and like, well, I want to do a video with you, like, because I don't know if it's a scam. Like, no, I'm dyslexic. I'm not ignorant. Believe me, I can write better than you. I have too much. I'm going to my second master. Nothing wrong with me. So like, oh, you have papers? You're undocumented? Like, yeah, I'm a citizen. I have dual citizenship. And to people that, how you know so much if you have misspelling? Because I'm dyslexic, or the pronunciation, like my pronunciation has nothing to do with my languages, has to do with my dyslexia. For example, I says leopard. I know they say it another way, but I like it. Most Americans cannot say Connecticut correctly. I can. So let me move my leopard and my brain the way it is.
Okay, so it's like you say tomato, I say tomato.
Tomato.
You say leopard, I say leopard.
And by the way, if you talk with a Scottish or Australian, believe me, you're going to have the same correlation. Yes. The first time I went to London, I says, where is the elevator? Oh, the lift on the right, left. No, 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 I don't want to take a taxi. I want to take the elevator, the lift. And she says, oh, you're American. Lift is an elevator. Oh, thank you very much. And we were both talking English.
Yes.
She was from India. She was raised there, but the English was different. Everybody
yes.
have their own dictionary. And people sometimes utilize the dictionary of the brain of a dyslexic person to diminish you. And I
yes.
found out, and I can't keep it inside anymore, you're so nothing that you need to make me feel bad in order to feel good. I feel so sorry for you. Because you're
yes.
losing the chance to become a better person in this conversation, then I decide to stop right now.
So you're also, you've trained in hostage negotiation as well.
I'm a civilian hostage negotiator. I'm the
okay.
only one. I initially did level 1 and 2. I was accepted to do level 3, and I got international certified. I was the only civilian, was the PET. And again, it took me a long time to be accepted. And finally got accepted, and that I've been really good friends with my teacher, Mark Lothar, and Jack Cambria. Jack Cambria is really well known because he's actually the Pearl 1, 2, 3. John Turturro character is based on Jack Cambria. When he retired, his party was so big that a couple of movies record that party to reuse it. And those were my teachers who accept me.
You use that in real life right now? Do you go out and do hostage negotiating?
Most people don't know, but you have private hostage negotiations, and that's where I cannot talk too much. I'm going to give an example, then I haven't participated. But for example, in Cambodia, the amount of kidnapping for money, fast ransom, or kidnapping express in South America happen all the time.
Yes.
The police doesn't intervene. The people is afraid to call any kind of authority. So they hire you to personally negotiate. And on top of that, when I finished as a hostage negotiator, I was accepted in Harvard Law School to do the negotiation program for advanced negotiation lawyers. So I was on the same table with lawyers who have been working for 25 years. Guess what? Pardon, but I wiped the floor with some of them because they were like so narrow-minded and everybody was so in the ego. Oh, I was accepted in Harvard. I'm a lawyer with 25 years experience. Like, well, I'm nobody. So I don't have anything to lose. And I think that is one of the advantages to be dyslexic. I don't have anything to lose. People already think that I'm cuckoo. So
yes.
go for it. And
wow.
sometimes it's good to play dumb.
Yes, it is, isn't it? I mean, that's fascinating because you've turned people's first impressions of you, even though they don't know you're dyslexic or whatever, they're using that those first impressions as an advantage, negative impressions in terms of, oh, right, you know, and you're using that as an advantage.
They don't expect you to be intelligent. So I always says when you have boobs and a brain, it's danger. Because they see the boobs first, but they don't see the brain at the same moment. They get distracted. So, yeah, I always like, oh, really? That? How fascinating. Tell me more. And you play dumb, 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 and people talk. That's the reason I teach interrogation. I always says your ego is the worst thing that go in your way. When you wanna, we have 2 ears and a mouth. When I have discovery calls, when I train sales reps and says, you're so worried to sell your service and you don't know what are the needs of the other person.
Yeah.
I have closed business from hello in 24 minutes with 514 companies. And people like, wait a minute, you close a contract and a discovery call? Yes. First of all, I says, thank you very much for your time. I understand that we have a stop clock. I'm visual, so I'm going to be taking notes to make sure that I didn't miss anything on the meeting. So at around minute 25, I'm going to go over my bullet points. I will not going to insult your intelligence telling you I don't want to work with you. But the difference, I want to work together. I want to give you the service that you need and a service that can take us to a long time. So based on behavior, and please ask all the questions you want, what do you think or how you perceive there are things that we can help you? Because I will not going to help you with something that I don't know that you need help with.
Yeah.
And people are like, you're not going to try to sell me anything? Like, if I tell you we're going to do a square and you have hired 4 people before to do a squares, you're not going to hire me. So if I know the square didn't work, let's make a triangle, a circle. It's not that it's not the job I do. I adapt my knowledge to your needs, because at the end of the day, it's not about me. It's to fixing your problems, and fixing those problems are going to give us a long-term relationship. So it's about listen to other people. It's, everybody says the golden rule is do to others what you're going to be done to you. That is wrong. That's real relationships, because your needs are not mine. So I need to think about your needs. You get distracted by noise. Me, noise, I learned to cancel it. So if noise bother you, I will not going to be doing this. You're going to go ballistic. So yeah. Respecting your needs is a way to establish a relationship.
Yes. Fantastic. We'll go back to the beginning of your story, but it's just fascinating to talk a little bit about where you're at just now. I've always thought that children and adults with dyslexia, especially in childhood, often become quite good negotiators because it's a kind of coping strategy. You know, they might go to the teacher and say, oh, I'm really sorry, this has been happening. Do you mind if you give me some more time? Or could you come and help me? And they kind of co-opt people to do it for you and all sorts of these kind of strategies. And they're just subtly negotiating. And I remember my mom saying to me, even though I didn't know I had dyslexia, she said, Darius, you could be like a diplomat or a negotiator or something. You've just got people to do certain things without you realizing, you know? And I wonder if you think the same. What are your thoughts on that?
It's funny because I have a wood shop. And as I told you, I went to the store and buy and build my own library that can hold a ton. Actually, my contractor says, the day we need to remove this, we need to redo the wall, how secure it is. So I can change the wipers on my car, the rubber. And I know people who move millions and they don't know how to. I can change the oil. I can put liquid for cleaning the car. I can maintain my car. I can change the tire. But dressing like this, I will not gonna change the tire. So what I do is if I have a flat tire, I get out of my car and says, can you help me? You know, I'm a woman. I'm really stupid. I don't know how to do that. And people says, do you take advantage? Like, no, I use situations based on the needs. Because you're right. You learn to negotiate all the time. Okay, I have this. I'm not good on this. Okay, I give you if you negotiate. Okay, yes. I'm good on see things in 3D, things that other people don't see. So I'm going to help you observing this. If you help me to correct my writing, I have a coach for writing 5 times a week. And she
right now.
And I had it before. I had had it for 2 years and I was afraid to write. And she made me love writing because she respects my voice. She doesn't change who I am. She made it grammatically correct and make me sound like I talk. So I negotiate with her and says, I'm going to bring you another dyslexic people to you, because if you learn to work with dyslexic without changing their words, they changing their voice, you're going to have so many clients. And that's it. My right hand on the company, she's dyslexic too. And the reason I hire her is because she's dyslexic. So you always negotiate with everything. It's true. You always learn to negotiate. I negotiated with my parents for the first time when I was 15. I was getting bored on the high school. Like, everybody go too slow. So I says, okay, this is the plan. I'm going to go to the library 8 hours a day for a year because I want to learn more and they go too slow. At the end of the year, I talk to my teachers. They're going to evaluate me and pass me the grade. What happened? Because I was going to an European school, you didn't need to do your presentations by writing. Oh. They were forcing to learn to teach you, and you learn. They taught you how to express verbally, not by writing. They says, writing is easy. Put your thoughts and talking is different. So when I started reading in the library, I realized that it was really difficult. So it says, when I went to the woman in the front of the library, she says, you don't have any more tape, book and tapes. I'm like, oh my God, I still have 8 months to go. I says, well, there is the blind library a couple of blocks away. So I spent 8 months on the blind library, listen to the books, reading at the same time. Today I do that with audiobooks and books.
Fantastic.
I can tell you the chapter and what he says when they say it and where is my book located here. So when I come back from that year, I went back to the school and all the teacher says, we don't want you in class. You're way too advanced for the other students. So the dean of the high school says, well, Susan, we have a problem. He says, nobody wants in the class. You become annoying to the other students and the teachers. So they offer to test you to pass high school 2 years before that I should have. And I'm like, great, I can go to the uni early. And I remember the dean talking to my mom, like, why you agreed to do that? I'm like, can you tell her no? She made us a business plan on how this is going to evolve and how she's going to go to the uni early so she can graduate early, can do a master, and she can make money easily. You going to tell her no? No. So I negotiated my first deal when I was 15. And I think today, if I have kids, no way I will negotiate that. Because it was the risk that I could be doing drugs, not study. And that's where I started the uni almost at the end of my 16s. And that's where they kicked me out because they says, that's when I find out that I'm dyslexic. And like, academic and dyslexia doesn't go together. So that is a deal that I couldn't negotiate. But with my parents, yes, I did.
Okay, fantastic. Oh, this is just so fun. I'm enjoying this. This podcast is sponsored by DyslexiaProductivityCoaching.com, which helps you organize yourself creatively with a productivity system for Apple devices. Now, there's one more thing I'd really like to know about, and that
yes.
is you also not just do hostage negotiation, but you also do body language as well, don't you? You read people's body language, is that correct?
I'm the only person on the world, again, my own brain have their own thoughts. When I started when I was 17, I was born and raised in Latin America. My parents were like diplomats. I moved to Europe. I got emancipated early and I went to Europe. And I was studying during the day in Belgium and bartender at night. And a guy came to me and he started talking to me about how I am. And he says, dude, so much work to get laid is not going to happen. And he says, no, I don't want anything with you. I'm a face reader. I read personality through the face and I work in politics. And like, And says, I'm going to point you. So start pointing people who work on the bar and describing how they are. I'm like, how you do that? Oh, it's a 3,000 years science. I'm like, really? People can do that? And says, you are have a natural, like you're the one who have more tips and you engage with the people even without talking the language. How you do it? Like, I don't know. For me, it's easy. And says, I don't know. I'm dyslexic. So, oh, wait a minute. That's the reason. and says, I need somebody to shadow me. You want to come with me? If you pay more than bartender, let's go. So I start shadowing him. And it was always using all the channels, body language, microexpression, linguistic analysis, forensic analysis, face reading, and personality types. And I study all those things in order to become a profiler. And when I was working in politics as a consulting or in the private sector as a consulting, I didn't have relationship with other profilers. And when I started getting on the profiler circle, I found out that they do one thing or another. And like, wait a minute, how you profile someone?
So for the listeners, who uses profilers? What's a profiler and what do they do?
Okay, for the ones who want a generalized, easy way to understand, if you watch Criminal Minds, when, for example, the person who profiled the Unabomber after 17 years that the Unabomber was killing people, Robert Shai, a linguist, was bringing to the table with Fitzgerald, and they study the manifesto and says, he's telling us who he is. We are not reading between lines. So he was the one who says he's not a, the only thing he was wrong, he was under the impression maybe he was African-American because he was born and raised in Chicago. But he says he was born and raised in Chicago. He's over 50, not 20, like you says. He's the same person. He's extremely, extremely intelligent. And he has some degree in engineering. And everybody like, you're wrong. That is not, guess what? That's the way they found it. But you can determine anonymous letters. Everybody sign an anonymous letter. If it's a woman, what is the age? What, how educated? It was a really good case here in Chicago where a company called me and says, we have a threat on the desk. And I says, well, she's a woman, a threat. Like, I'm going to make public that this place is racist. I'm going to tell the media. And the HR sent me a copy and says, I don't need transcript. I need a picture of the threat, the anonymous letter. And I says, oh, wait a minute. I got it. It's a woman, African-American, over 50. She's new in the company. She keep it to herself. She read novels, is not college educated, and have a really good relationship with this person and have a really bad relationship to this person that she mentioned on the note. And I see the guy doing this. He says, wait a minute, I'm coming back in 5 minutes. Was that woman? The way she talk, a man is not going to say, my feelings has been hurt by the words used in the office. A man says, I'm pissed off.
Yes.
That is profiling someone.
Yes.
Nobody sign.
And does that happen quite a lot in business? You know, like you often think of it in Criminal Minds and in all the cops and military and things like that. But you sound like you're more on the civilian side. Is that right?
Yeah, I work 100% with companies. Companies, lawyers, they found me. Like, I don't advertise. I do shows. I have a YouTube channel, do things like that. But when things get bad, lawyer says, you need to talk to someone that I have.
Sorry to interrupt you, but you know when they profile juries and they look at them and so on, have you ever done that?
Mm-hmm. Jury selection. I need one. People is confused. I don't need 12. I need one.
What do you mean you need one?
I don't need 12 jurors. I need one. I need an alpha that is easy to influence and think like I needed to think.
Oh, that's, I remember watching.
The movie?
What's the one doctor? It's a strange.
Dr. Bull. That's
Bull.
True.
Yeah, sir. Bull. He did that. I watched the first episode and I thought, no, this is not for me. But, you know, there's Lie to Me and Dr. Bull. You sound like.
Well, Lie to Me is based in Paul Ekman. And I went to Manchester, UK, to study with the guy the show is based. And he's a master in Manchester that I was admitted based on his studies. And that's the master that I did with my thesis in manipulation, obedience, false implanted memories, and false confessions.
Wow. So you're kind of like in Lie to Me. I was picturing, you know, the guy coming to you in
between
the bar.
Lie to Me, Dr. Bull, and yeah. I don't know.
But remember in Lie to Me, he comes across this woman who is in the scanner at the airport, and she can tell who's actually, she's like a human scanner rather than the scanner. And the doctor spots her and says, "You're a natural reader." And that's kind of like how I pictured your scenario.
That was in the beginning. And I understand that you kind of run with luck. You need to get that luck, a structure, a support.
Yes.
And it's happened to me sometimes. I choose to deviate myself from the television profilers and the people who call themselves the human lie detector. Like, that is not true. We are not perfect. You cannot do two truths and a lie. And again, you need way more deepness. And the three ways you can find somebody's lying to you, like, no.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
It's not true. So I deviate myself from the scenic and go to more like to the academic point. And the reason today I'm doing my second master in behavioral economics, how people think and how the brain work and the emotions work and the decisions that we made. And by the way, 90% of the decisions that we made are irrational.
Yes.
So you need a good fundamental study on that.
Yeah.
That those shows are fascinated. The problem, they did a study in 2009 and they find out, no, I'm sorry, Lightly was from 2009 to 2011. In 2011, they did a study and they put people who watched the show Lie to Me, the show Numbers, and people who never saw any of those shows. Guess who was more accurate and less accurate? And finding out is somebody's lying or not.
I'm going to guess the people who hadn't watched the show because you brought it up.
So, no, those are the groups they used to evaluate.
Yeah.
The one who saw Lie to Me, that we need to understand, even though they have certain, because the two first season, Paul Ekman was involved, and the third one, no. Those shows, they need to be a TV show. So you have the boom, the explosion, the big thing in order to be a show. So when people eat those things and reality doesn't happen, actually is something that since 2015 has been studied called the CSI effect. When the reason the Casey Anthony, the jury didn't find guilty the mother is because actually they interviewed the juror number three. It says, we don't have a body. We don't know how he died. We don't have picture. We don't have a schedule. So everybody was waiting for the CSI effect when image floating, we can how many palpitations the baby had before that. No. So they acquit her, not guilty, when all the jurors intervened and said, we know he's guilty, but we didn't have anything to prove it. That person was acquitted. So one of the biggest problems today is when people go to the doctor, they're expecting to show what is going to happen. When you want to select the jury and you have a case where things can be proved, like the TV proof, people expect the CSI effect. And if you go to any CSI department, nothing that you see in the show is true. But those shows have messed with people's mind.
That's the reason I... people's expectations. Yeah.
Yeah. They put them on a false reality, the how things happen. When people say, oh, yeah, I know it's lying. How do you know it's lying? Because the shoulder. Let me show you. I always show Bill Gates have a shoulder tick. And it's a famous keynote speaking he did with Steve Jobs. And he lied on that video. So I show that video and ask the people, I'm going to tell you, he's lying. But how do you know that he's lying? And like, well, the shoulder. Nope. Well, you need to have clusters of different things together that determine that he's lying. Second of all, you need to have a baseline. So I'm animated with my hands, half Jewish, half Italian. When I stop moving my hand, that is a deviation with my baseline. Something is going on.
Okay.
So he gluck when God, I'm in trouble. And he pursed the lips, pulled the body out, and lowered the eyes through a Steve Jobs. He was looking at Steve Jobs, and he was in the shoulder. I show a video 40 years later and you see Steve Jobs and Bill Gates doing this all the time. It's a tick. So easily people go to a date, go to a job interview or a human resource interview. Someone like, oh yeah, we need to corroborate, but I know he's lying. Like, how you know he's lying? Well, because I read an article and the shoulder like, wait a minute. You are fulfilling your own prophecy. You're only looking for things to prove what you already perceive is true. Now, when you're going to interview, when you're going to do, we're going to teach someone interrogation, when you're going to talk to someone, interrogate with someone, you need to go with the premises that person is not lying. Then I'm going to find things to show me that person is lying.
Okay.
But if you go to met with someone and says, oh, this person is going to be annoying. This person is going to be this and this and this and this. The only thing you're going to do on that premise, on that meeting, on that moment, is look for things to fulfill only the preconceptions you have. And that is danger. It's like going to a first day with a wedding. Oh my God, this is the man I want to marry. This is going to be the love of my life. And at the end, it says, I was like, oh, you know what? He wasn't what I expect he would be. Like, your expectation is a different deception and lying.
Yes.
I got deceived by my own thoughts. I got deceived by my own thinking. But when I confront what the person is, obviously I'm going to feel deceived. Because my fantasy is like me thinking at the age of 52, I'm going to get the Nobel Prize in writing. Susan, a reality check is not going to happen.
Yeah.
What the things I can do at the 52 is use my knowledge, my life experience to help others, young people, to understand how to do it right, how to my classes, when I go to a company, when I present to someone and take first. So much time to get those myths erased and put the right information that sometimes people don't want to. Because people don't want to admit they're wrong. So they prefer to live in ignorance than have the wisdom that, yeah, I read the wrong person. I train with the wrong person. I did the wrong thing. And between my Asperger and my dyslexia, I'm sorry, dude, I'm not going to have a filter. I'm going to tell you you need it.
Yes. You know, if you don't mind me asking,
yeah.
When I was researching a little bit, you've sometimes given the host impressions of what you've read in the host or on the other side. Is there some sort of thing you like, exercise you like to do that's fun that maybe the listeners might like to hear you do between you and me?
For example, you are straightforward, 1, 2, 3. You like, I know that because you told me before, but beside OCD or anything like that, you like thinking 3 or 5. They need to have a balance things. So probably you have things in a certain way. If somebody moves something in your house, you're going to know even an inch. If I'm going to your closet and only to piss you off, I turn her upside down a hanger, you're going to go ballistic. You're going to spend all day. You can perceive things, but you're straightforward. You help people to tell the stories because it's part of the podcast, help other people to understand dyslexia, but not personally because you're too much on the story. Show me the money. What is going on? Tell me where we're going. But on the other hand, it's not that you're emotionally to cry, but you're a person who holds emotions inside you. You don't talk too much. You have been all your life holding those feelings. And you tend to talk only when those feelings are pushing so hard they need to go out. And you have the fulfilled prophecy that says you're expecting that things are not going to go right. The good side of that, you're always ready for the hurricane. Or you're always ready for something goes wrong. So you're really fast and like, okay, this is the problem. This is the solution. You're ready before the problem show up.
Okay.
To the point that sometimes you need to explain people like what you did, like, well, when you was running like chicken without head, are you ready to fix it?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, You're right on a number of things. The only little thing you're wrong about is my wardrobe, which is a complete mess. And I have no idea where anything is, really. And if you changed anything in, I wouldn't notice it. The order that comes in my life is often through my wife, ironically, who's a very linear thinker, has kind of trained me to say, you know, everything has a place and everything in its place, which is a great relief to me, but not in my wardrobe.
No, I give you an example. Somebody moves something that you usually see every day.
Yes.
I give the example that...
Okay, yeah.
An example that is visually for other people and not going to personally your life or things
well,
personally because
sense.
We are in a set.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because
it's a set. Your space, whatever is your space, that is the space where you're going to notice where things are changed because... Some people can see a mess in your desk and like, don't touch anything because I know wherever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
When I says that people think they like the way they want, doesn't mean that you're going to be putting the finger all the time to dust the dirt.
Yes.
Is that the way you like it? So in that mess, you know how to find something when another person going to go ballistic. I'm sure your wife doesn't like to go to your office. And for you, it's perfect the way it is.
Yeah. So, you know, something that crossed my mind is, why don't you name drop the lady who helps you do the writing? Who is she? Who's the lady?
Oh, Rebecca.
Yeah, what's her name?
Rebecca.
Okay.
It's amazing because she not only is completely bilingual. Actually, she speaks English, Spanish, Italian, and French. And she have an institution that help people in translate and work in a lot of languages. And actually, I hire her. She worked with me personally for 5 times a week. Elva, that's the other person I want to introduce. She's amazing. I met her 6 years ago. She was breastfeeding a baby. And the Cariola, the other person, not speaking English, being an assistant, I hired her as an assistant 6 years later. I strongly believe she's going to be the best profiler I ever met. She's completely bilingual. She have done shows with me. She trained in English and Spanish. She managed our Latin American speaking Spanish English office. And guess what? She met with Rebecca 3 times a week. And Rebecca is the person who met with everybody in my team when we want to make sure the things are done right. But everybody who is dyslexic in my company have time with Rebecca. And one of the things more people don't know, this is a woman-owned, woman-home company. All the people that I work with, they're a stay-at-home mom, putting a roof on top of their kids. So it's my family. Don't touch my family. But Rebecca, including Rebecca, the person who worked with us, she's amazing. Without her, I couldn't get on the master. Actually, I make her write a letter saying that she's going to help me with the grammar, but she's not going to affect my master. And the dean says, we don't need it. I need you to know. Then I ask for help. And a fair. So I make the letter, get certified. I give it when I start the master. And they know that every day for an hour, I met with her. And still make mistakes.
So we definitely know where you are now in your story in terms of the negotiation, the profiling. It's absolutely fascinating. So let's rewind. And talk about your dyslexia story, your dyslexia journey. And what was life like before you discovered you were dyslexia? And what was your wake-up call to dyslexia? Was it a person? Well, what happened? How did you find out about your dyslexia? And what was life like before it?
It's not a proper English, the one I'm going to describe it, but I'm sure a lot of people are going to find related to that. Until I was 17, then I was diagnosed. It was always a struggle. Then I was lazy. I was stupid. I wasn't apply enough. Punishment from the teachers. Punishment from other kids. Mocking, bullying. 35 years ago, you're going to tell your parents you got bullied and says, I'm going to slap you too. So go and fix it. And this dyslexia make me stronger, thicker skin. I don't believe in gaining and gifting without fighting. My parents says, you don't like it, change it. They don't expect me to change it for you. So that taught me to defend myself. I know a lot of people says, well, the bullying, give your kids tools. Don't give them the fish. Teach them how to fish. Because when you're not around, somebody else is going to bully them. Today, I don't let anybody bully me. Guess why? Because when I was 5 years old, I fixed my own problems. So that was the stigma that made me compensate. So always my personality was a little more aggressive, physically included, until I was 17. By the age of 15, I already have tattoos, leather pants, shaved my head, and painted in color blue. So nobody going to mess with me. Because I looked like I can punch in the face. And I wasn't a rebel kid. I loved to read. I spent time in my house. I didn't smoke. I never did drugs. By the way, I'm allergic to drugs. So it wasn't that. But I was compensating so people don't mess with me. Because I was tired to people messing with me. So when I went to the uni, I went to study psychology and sociology and become a profiler. I knew really early age. Then I went to work for the FBI. So faster, I needed to get at least my first degree done by the age of 24. So I was in a paddock career. One of my teachers gave me introductions to psychology, says, when I talk to you, I feel like I'm talking with a PhD student. But when you write, it's like you're 5 years old. It's not a connection between your brain and your writing. I'm going to send you with a counselor to evaluate what's going on. So after a certain evaluation, I remember the guy says, and pardon my French, says, the bad news, you're highly, highly, almost not functional dyslexic. But the good news, you're hot. So if you marry well, you're going to do it well. And I look at the guy and says, do you see my ass? Great, because it's the last thing you're going to see about me. No way. I went home and I was so depressed. Academia is not for me. I was in bed. I was 17, frustrated. I didn't have a backup plan. I was like, okay, done. I'm going to jump. My house wasn't high enough to jump from the roof. But that was the consequences when you tell someone that because it's different, things are not going to be conquered. We didn't have internet. I couldn't read other people. But I was emotionally suicidal. I never did it. I never intended. But emotionally, it was a suicide. Somebody killed my dreams. Now what? So I remember after 2 months, 2 weeks, not by baiting, nothing. My dad came and says, first bait. He smelled like a wet dog and came to my studio. We're going to talk. Like, I don't want it. I'm not asking you. I'm telling you. Come on. So I bait. Went to talk to my dad and says, there are two ways you're going to get where you need to go. My dad was a diplomat without finishing high school because he was an artist. Says, there are two ways you're going to get to shore. You're going to fly, you're going to go in a boat, you're going to drive, or you need to swim with sharks. And look like you're going to need to learn really fast to swim. If you think the things are not going the way you want, make them your way. Failure is not in your DNA. Don't start so young. So I got early emancipated and made my backpack. And I remember it was funny. I pack up a printer. No one says, why I pack a printer to move to Europe? That's feeling that I need a printer. So because I was writing, my writing was horrible. So I went to
like
Belgium
first. A printer
first.
Or typewriter? Or
no, printer. A printer for my computer.
Oh, like a little printer.
A huge packet printer. I don't know. I never understood. And I talked to a therapist. And like, I think it was the safetiness that your words can be understand. Mobile computers wasn't on that point. It was 1989. So
yes. Wow.
That's when I went to Belgium. And I live in Europe from the 17 to 29. Then I came to the United States. I work as a political consultant. I ran my own campaign when I was 24. I was brought to the United States for that reason. And I work as a political consultant until 35. Then I got burned out. I never take a vacation. And I would say the only thing I regret in my life is not to have continue with politics, because you can be politically incorrect. Nobody knows who you are. you don't have exposure. Being invisible is great. And all this exposure, I don't like it. I'm shy. I'm extremely introvert. I'm an hermit, live in the middle of the forest. Sometimes I don't see people on long, long days for what I do and because I don't like people. And your environment make you. And here on the forest, my thoughts are better, are more productive. So when I went from politics to private consulting, I needed to become a brand. I needed to have a name to represent myself. It was extremely traumatic. I didn't want to. And that's when I went to the UK to study. And that's where somebody from a really well-known three-letter agency in the UK says, we want to talk with you. I says, why? And says, well, one of the other students in your class is from our agency and he tell us about you and we already profile you. We're going to offer an interposition. And like, why? Says, well, one in X amount of people are dyslexic, but one every 10 million is dyslexic with Asperger, functional, both. You have a way to see things and in your brain work differently. And I was 1 year to become citizen. And it was like, I love it. It's fun. But what if I don't like it? And that's where I come back to the United States and says, wait a minute, I'm not stupid. If they want me, it's for some reason. So I start going to institutions and people who teach dyslexic adults to, because it's different to teach an adult than teach a kid, how to utilize my IQ and EQ to get all the bucket lists and goals that I couldn't conquer when I was younger. And that's when I went to study with a lot of people says, oh, I study with Robert Cialdini. Huh? Well, I did an online class. I have pictures with him. I went to Arizona to study with him in person. I studied with Paul Ekman. I studied with interrogators from the Mossad. I graduated from Berkeley, Harvard. I did a master in the UK. I almost accepted in a dual bilingual master to become an expert in behavioral economics. Probably next year I'm going to be teaching. I work with the biggest company on the world. And sometimes politicians still sometimes call me. But the way I went back to school was when I was 40.
Yeah.
I conquered 52 certifications on top of my master's in less than 12 years. I stopped before the pandemic. Why and how? If I couldn't do it in my first 39 years old, it's because I was surrounded by the right people who instead to reinforce my problems, give me tools to reinforce my gaining and the things that I have that make me who I am. I'm stronger, I'm better for the people that I surround in my life, in my personal life and in my business life. That's the reason I have people in my team. The youngest people in my team has been with me 6 years. The other people has been with me for 20 years. Because we know each other, we support each other, we are a family. And I have people who help me on the background with learning process, like Rebecca. Then I couldn't be who I am today without them. You cannot do this by yourself reading a book. And the first step of learning is parents. Don't pity your kids because they are dyslexic. Make them tougher. And I don't have kids, and most people says, you don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, I do. This hurt when I was a kid. And still today, sometimes when somebody says something like, look, and ruin my day, and I still want to roll in a bowl and like, maybe they're right. Maybe I'm a stupid and I'm not aware of that. You still have that in the back of your head. But don't pity your kids, because when you're not there, they're going to need to learn to defend themselves when a bully going to take that difference that we have to make us feel nothing.
Yes.
Give them tools that are going to give them a toolbox they can use all their life. And don't be ashamed to say it. And so, I told you, every time that give a keynote speak and says, I'm highly dyslexic, and my idea today is you understand, don't judge me for my grammar, judge me for my knowledge. And if it's not, let me prove you I can do it better than you are.
Yes, yes. So you're saying that what made the difference over the last 12 years was the people you intentionally brought around you really amplified your unique abilities and didn't really take any notices of the things you found challenging.
No. And actually, the first person they need to push to do was myself. I'm like, oh, I'm going to fail. Why? Because they make me feel before, then I'm going to fail before they start.
Yes.
And one day I did therapy to conquer that fears. And I remember he says, what if you don't fail? What is going to happen? Let's change the scenario. What if you don't fail? And it took me long. And he looked at me like, and so should I try? No, you're not going to try. You're going to do it. And I remember the first time it was like in a corner, little, and like, oh my God, I'm going to fail. And I didn't. And I went to the next one. And I found teachers who like, oh, my son is dyslexic. I know what you're going through. I'm going to help you to do the test. I'm not going to do multiple choice. I'm going to explain it to you. Now that I'm doing my master, I says to the teacher, I don't know if I want to be in that class. It's too many people. I want to be in the small class. And she says, I think other students are going to be benefit for your knowledge and your experience because everybody is in their late 20s. Like, what? They can be my kids, but they're going to be in benefit. And it says, one of the problem when a huge group of people, not when I'm talking, I can talk to 50,000 people in an audience. I can be training, no problem. But when it's me, Susan, as a student, they need to be seen. It's completely different than the person you see here. I'm a small, I don't want to turn on the camera. And sometimes like, oh, because of that. And sometimes I don't realize, then I say it out loud. And she says, you're autistic? Like, no, I'm Asperger. The still thing is different. And it's my condition, so I can name it the way I want it. I don't care they change their name because what happened, I'm Jewish. So I have the right to not name my own condition. And it says, oh, I have a son who have the same condition you have. So I get it. I'm going to ask you if you and when you want to participate. If I wouldn't say it because I was ashamed, I wouldn't have the chance to be in a class where I feel comfortable to interacting with other students. I wouldn't miss the chance to enjoy the process if I wouldn't be the person.
Fantastic. I mean, I'm just processing this as I'm listening. And I'm kind of thinking the lesson I'm taking away from this is because you're self-aware of what you need with your autism, dyslexia, and how you respond, you can then advocate for yourself and say, look, you know, I find this challenging. And then the other person can say, look, we can solve that. But none of that would have happened if you weren't aware of what you needed.
Nope. And actually, I remember talking with someone says, oh, don't tell you have Asperger because Elon Musk say that he is, and they're going to think you're crazy too. Like,
right.
Why are you going to be ashamed? That's okay. Well, let's not go back 35 years for when I was diagnosed on the uni. I'm not going to go back to that. I don't have any problem. I have a clean bill. My therapist fired me. Says, you don't need any more therapy. You need to go out there. Stop.
Yeah.
You don't
yeah.
need me.
Yeah.
You need
yeah.
other people. You need other things to help you to move. Therapy, you figure out. Go and do it. What the heck? You're going to apply next. That was a couple of years ago. You're going to apply for a second master? You don't have a degree and you made it. Go and leave. Enjoy
yeah.
life.
Yeah.
She was right.
Brilliant. Your therapist fired you. Now, I know your time's limited and I'm just thinking in my mind, you know, what was your main challenge, would you say? You know, you've talked about lots of things with dyslexia. What do you think are your main challenges? Because it's not the same for every single person. Could you make that clear to the listeners, what you found from your dyslexia as main challenges?
today everybody fight about AI, and without AI, I couldn't be functional. And AI is the grammar corrector. Now I can dictate my articles to the computer, then it's easy. It's not to have the right tools 20 years ago. We right. didn't have any of the tools. Today, kids have tools
yes.
to avoid the pain to, oh God, come back the paper with the red, do it again, yes. like, no, but why? Like,
yes, yes.
This red, I yes. still remember the C minus and the red. Do it again and do it again and get frustrated at 10 p.m. being a kid and like, oh, why? And now, instead to fight with the AI, people have tools to help them to conquer that. And actually, I don't know anybody who's dyslexic who doesn't use Grammarly or thesaurus or synonyms. That is not there. It's not in your head. They help you to put together. It's still you. Yes. But that help you to put that. And actually, I didn't know. I found out when I got the psychology to the article, there is a dyslexic person that develop a font, a type of font to write in yes. that is easy to read for us because we cannot read all the fonts. Something that I didn't know before. We're like, oh my God, I'm losing my visual. Like, why? And like, change the font. I'm like, oh, I can read this. Yeah. Their font created for us. Can you imagine, Darius, if that would have happened 30 years ago, what we can conquer?
Yeah, yeah. I so agree with you. I think that's so fantastic an answer because, you know, your challenge, what you're basically saying is your challenge was you weren't given the tools you needed to function in school and in uni, end of story.
We didn't know that we need those tools. Yeah. Now yeah. we need that we need it.
Yes. You know, I think AI is going to solve dyslexia's challenges and amplify its advantages. I think it's already been doing it, and it's going to do it so much more in the future until all this low-grade clerical stuff that we get judged on just becomes automated and we can enter into our unique abilities because we've got more specialized minds.
We need to understand the MI6, the CIA, FBI, and the Mossad hire dyslexic people as profilers and interrogators because we hear and see in 3D, meaning that we can observe on 3D that the reason we can see clusters together about situations, room, you can map a room and remember and see things happening and your peripheral awareness, meaning that not this way, like nobody else can do it.
Yes. I call them wide-angled thinkers.
Well, it's called 3D. So why those institutions that are supposedly to be the top of the world hire people like us, but we still call it stupid when we misspell a word? Yes. We need to educate the ignorance because ignorant is not the degree you have. Is the resistance to learn how other people function.
Yeah.
Or other people skin colors, or other people genders, or other people differences that you have. That is ignorant. I don't care your title. You can be an ignorant PhD. And believe me, I met a lot of them. And you can be an extremely aware person who never had a degree, but have the curiosity to learn why you are the way you are and how you are really beside that misspelling you have.
Fantastic. So we've covered the beginning of the story, how you became aware of dyslexia, what was the challenge before dyslexia, your life behind, your wake-up call with that lecturer, and then the challenges, not having the right tools, then gathering around the people and over the last 12 years. And now you're in this place where you're really expressing your unique abilities within a context that supports. And it's fascinating to watch how often people with dyslexia become real team players because they need to be part of a team, because there's a specialized tool within a wider toolkit, as it were, where other people might be universal tools where they can do a bit of everything averagely. You're much more specialized, so you combine yourself with other people as well. It's fascinating to watch that, see that happening in your life.
I wouldn't be who I am without my team.
Yes.
It's impossible. And the team is go from Rebecca. They have all the patience. And sometimes we're going to kill each other because like, no, Rebecca, this need to go that way. But doesn't make sense. But it makes sense to where I work with. And we fight. And I love that we fight. And she learned in each class. And I learned in each class. And she's going to, I says, honey, you can get rid of everybody in life. Me, until you die, you stuck with me. I adore her for that. And Elba and Alma and everything in the team, they know we support each other. And it's funny because sometimes Elba and I, we are so connected that we have the same misspelling.
Yes.
I'm like, I ruined you. And Elba says, why? Because we are so in synchro. We met every day that you already ruined your dyslexia to mimic mine. And says, well, maybe we mirror dyslexia. So we work on the same things. But that I sent everything that I write to them. And like, oh, Susan, you're dyslexic. Like, knowledge is right and the opposite. Like, at least I'm consistent with that. But if I would try to do this by myself,
yeah.
Oh my God, I will be cutting grass and where I live. Nothing wrong with that, but it's not the outcome that I was expecting for myself.
Yes. So sometimes I like to ask people what's in their toolbox. You know, like what do they tend to use as tools? Because often with dyslexia, we're real tool people because we kind of externalize a lot of the processes that people do in their head. We just find we need to get things out of our heads, use mind mapping, dictate stuff down, whatever it is that are the tools. Now, you've obviously got this network of people that are supporting you, but what sort of tools do you tend to go to on a regular basis? What's in your toolbox?
This little gadget, I live on that. And this, not because I'm addicted to media, is because I can dictate. I have dictionary treasures. I have dictionaries in all the languages that I speak. My computer, taking notes. And other things that at least happened to me is I have a black book. I have notes, book notes all over the house. Another thing that I do, and people say it's crazy, but for dyslexic 3D dimensional thinking is great. I live on the forest and I have a glass house. So I found these markers that I can write on the windows.
Oh, like they do in the movies.
Yeah. And I have stickers on all my bathrooms. And when I have an idea that is like conflicting and I cannot like pull it out, I write things. So every time that I pass, I'm like, no, still I don't get it. And I have things visually around me.
Yes.
Or things like bucket list or whiteboards, like things that I'm struggled this week. So I put it on the whiteboard. I take a picture. I send them to all my networking and like, I'm stuck with this. Oh no, Susan, because you need to do 1 + 1 - 3 to be -1. Oh, you're right.
Yes.
Not be ashamed to ask for help, but everything that has been invented, I use it. And trial and error. And sometimes they send me programs to try. If I like it, if they work with me or not, based, and then I'm being so open about this lecture. Like, hey, we have a new program. Can you like, please send them to me?
Yes.
Please send them to me. And I enjoy testing. And like, you know what? It was difficult because that didn't understand. I need them to get my speech voice and follow me and recognize what are my mistakes. So I have been working with them and more than happy. So if you're trying a program from dyslexia, please let me be the beta tester. I love that.
Okay. Well, actually, I'm just about to create a mind mapping app called Ivy. Do you do mind mapping?
No. Okay. Everybody have a dictionary. What is a mind mapping for you? Because for me, it's writing things on the glass and white board. So what is I'm mind mapping for you?
Okay, so mind mapping is, that's a form of it, but mind mapping is like Tony Buzan did, where you start with a central image, you do a branch off it, you put a keyword on it, you put images on it, you connect more branches, and there's a sort of a hierarchy of knowledge using keywords, images, and branching structures. You can do it by hand, or you can do it on a computer where it branches things out and you can move things around and reorganize them visually.
I connect that in my Y word. So maybe I'm not connected by arrow, not all the time, but I do the circle and say, okay, this is the website and design programs, yes, and where they gonna connect. Yes. Like, okay, that's the way I organize my books.
Yes.
When I move, somebody helped me to put the books and put it by shape, and I almost have a heart attack. It took me 2 years to reorganize my books because my mind map, I know I, without even think, watching, I can grab a book and know where it is.
Yeah, that so is, your bookshelf is kind of like a map of knowledge, and they're all related to one another. Fascinating. So that's like a book mind map, as it were. So yeah, that's kind of what I'm talking about. There's all sorts of variations on it. It was just fascinating to see how
you... I would love to see it. Yeah, I would love to see it, because it's all, everything that you can do to improve, please bring it.
Yeah,
and don't be afraid to ask for help and go to institutions and how you can improve your own life and the people around you that suffer for the same.
Yes. Well, I know your time is short and we need to finish off soon. So what sort of...
And I'm sorry for that, but here in Chicago, we have 20 centimeters or 4 inches of snow freezing below zero. So I need to take the train and I cannot drive to the city.
Yes. And when you say below zero, you mean minus 50, 50?
Minus 50 Celsius, minus 30, 32 Fahrenheit. So we're talking frozen. I went outside to remove the snow and my lips froze.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Or I think it must be the other way around. Minus 32 centigrade and 50 Fahrenheit, because it's normally Fahrenheit's a bigger number, isn't it?
32 Fahrenheit is zero Celsius. That's the only conversion. I was educated in Europe.
I get them so confused.
I like centimeters and I like Celsius.
Me too.
No, I don't like
Fahrenheit. It confuses me.
Me too.
Final words. What sort of final words would you say to people who are listening? Often parents are listening to this, who are in the workplace, they've got children with dyslexia, they've got dyslexia themselves, or educators. What would you say, final words to them?
Don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid to say that what are your challenge. Most people is willing to help than the people is going to bully you. And people hurt you with the things they know and hurt you with the things they don't know. If you put it out there and that people bully you, guess who is the bully? You don't allow him to bully you.
Yeah.
Why? Because you confront that is your limitation. Limitation to write, limitation to read. But the otherwise, I feel like I have a superpower. So remember that. When you have a kid, show him or show her who are dyslexic or were dyslexic and the things they conquer. The owner of Virgin. Look what he become, what he says, I never write an email since the beginning, I hire somebody else. So tell them the tools they can use. Learn as an adult, what are your preferences to study? What are your preferences to do things? Never feel below anybody else, because believe me, I don't feel below anyone. I don't feel on top of anyone. I feel that I am who I am because of the dyslexic. I feel it's a superpower. I love that I have it. I regret not having the tools before, but now you had it as an adult and as a parent. So never let anybody bully you or your kids, because we're different, because we're special, because we're awesome.
Thank you very much. What a great way to end it. Thank you. This podcast is sponsored by dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com. It's my day job when I'm not hosting this podcast. Tell me, do you know what you want to achieve in the workplace, but you're struggling with how to achieve it? Maybe you suspect some traits of dyslexia are getting in the way. Well, that's where Dyslexia Productivity Coaching comes in, because we give you a simple productivity system for your Apple devices that harnesses the creativity that comes with your dyslexia. It includes proven methods like note-taking, reminders, speech-to-text, mind mapping, and more, all tailored to your needs. It'll free up your time and help you achieve outstanding results. Book a complimentary call to discuss it with me, and if you do it soon, I may also be available to coach you personally via Zoom. So don't be shy, go to dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com or swipe up and book it now.